in the city of San Francisco, on the eve of the new millennium, a time traveler dropped in from another world.
I'm not human. I am not like you.
He's flatlining!
A mysterious visitor with the power to defy death and be reborn in a new body.
The dead stay dead. You can't turn back time.
Yes, you can.
Now he must face an old enemy.
I'm alive!
More deadly.
He has opened the Eye of Harmony.
Than anything the Earth has ever seen.
By midnight tonight, this planet will be pulled inside out.
Good and evil are about to wage war.
Doctor, look out!
And the battleground is Earth. Doctor Who.
Gentleheads, hello and welcome to another episode of Who's to Review, the show where we review Doctor Who. My name is Tom Denham and I'm joined by my host, Ben Holt.
Thank you again. Guys, we're terribly sorry. We have taken ages lately. I went on a holiday, went overseas, had a great time in Texas, but now we're back. And we have something pretty special today. At least Tom thinks so.
Yeah, I know. We've been talking up on the Facebook page and elsewhere, we've been talking about this special episode coming up soon, this anniversary episode. What on earth could it be, Ben?
I've got no idea. I know that the anniversary is it May 23rd? I think
something like that.
Yeah,
it's May.
Close.
Yeah.
Just tell us what is it, Tom?
Well, it is none other than Doctor Who. The movie.
The movie from 1996.
That's the one.
The movie starring Paul McGann.
None other.
The movie that's set in San Francisco, but it was actually Vancouver.
That's the one.
Oh my God.
So good.
Oh, fantastic. Yes, finally, Tom. Now, can I kick this off?
Certainly.
Great. Now, this is the first piece of Doctor Who I've ever seen. That's just
really?
That's just a fact.
Yeah.
Long, long time ago, you said, here we are, try this show, I really like it. And you handed me this DVD Doctor Who, the movie. And, you know, clearly I wasn't sure what I was going to be in for. And to be honest, it was quite odd the first time I saw it. But I had not seen this in about 5 years.
Yeah.
So here we are. We watched it tonight in honour of the 20th anniversary, which is indeed in May.
It is fantastic.
Yeah. So, go on. You love this.
This is one of the greatest pieces of Doctor Who history in my mind. I just think there's no... Okay, a lot of people say there are a lot of flaws with this movie, but in my mind, there is nothing wrong with this movie whatsoever. It is perfect in every way. It is probably one of the best things to have the name Doctor Who on.
Yeah, it's just amazing. You're such an avid Doctor Who fan. But most Doctor Who fans don't praise this anywhere near as highly as you. So I'm going to be fascinated to get your take on that throughout this one here today. Now, would you like me to read the blurb?
Please do, yeah.
Okay. The Doctor's returning home to Gallifrey with the remains of his arch nemesis, the Master. Forced off course, the TARDIS arrives in San Francisco on New Year's Eve 1999, where the Doctor is critically wounded in a gangland gun battle. At the local hospital, Dr. Grace Holloway fights and fails to save his life. Later, in the morgue, the Doctor wakes up a new man, but he is not the only one. The Master has also found himself a new body. As the clock counts down to the start of the new millennium, can the Doctor stop his oldest enemy destroying all life on Earth?
Oh.
Now, this film clocks in at around 1 hour and 25 minutes, pretty much exact.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, okay, this is really Paul McGann's only time is in Doctor Who on TV. Now, yes, I understand for the 50th we got that little 5-minute episode.
Yeah.
But in my mind, this is still pretty much his only time that he was on the big screen.
Touché.
Now, what's fascinating is for the first 20 minutes, we don't even see Paul McGann.
It's all Sylvester McCoy.
That's right. It's all Sylvester McCoy, which I was rapt that he got another go here, to be honest. It was great to see him back in the 90s. So
now, I've got some interesting stuff to say about McCoy's appearance in the TV movie. Now, Philip Seagal, the producer of this, fighted with the BBC and Fox to get the Seventh Doctor in there for the regeneration. If the regeneration wasn't in there, this probably wouldn't have been counted as canonical, which means people would have disregarded it from the continuity that it has with the TV series. To be in line with the TV series, you need to see the regeneration.
I think that's absolutely fair.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden, who's this new guy? How did he get here?
It would have been like the Peter Cushing Dalek movies.
Yeah, which technically is not canon with the series.
Because he's called Doctor Who.
Yeah. So there you go. Well, that makes complete sense.
Now, originally, when Philip Seagal was kind of pitching and writing it, he wanted to do a farewell for Ace.
There you go, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but because the BBC said, no, we don't want that, we want to start from scratch, we want it to be new, that kind of pushed that aside, and they were saying, no, we don't want McCoy in it, we just want Paul McGann. And he goes, no, we need Sylvester McCoy to, like, pass the Flaming Torch.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. One era to the next.
Yeah, and he got there, which I'm very happy for, because, it's really refreshing to see Sylvester McCoy back in this.
Yeah, I got to say, I think refreshing is the right word. It's a lot of fun, even like that opening. I just like how he's sitting there, you know, he's got his record player on.
He's got his cup of tea.
Cup of tea, you know, taking it easy. And then all of a sudden things start to take a bit of a dark turn.
Yeah, and you can definitely tell just from looking at him, he's looking a bit more weary than he was after we last saw him in Survival, the last TV story.
Yeah, immediately, his hair is out of control in this movie. It looks like it's going to eat his face.
You can definitely tell.
Yeah.
You can definitely tell time has passed here, and obviously Big Finish have helped to fill that gap with all the audio stories, and there's been books and everything else, and Ace has left.
I mean, now, hang on. Survival was 1989, wasn't it?
It was,
so it was a seven-year gap, really, before we'd seen any Doctor Who. Now, how did this come about? How come we had this big gap, and why all of a sudden in 96 we get a movie after we hadn't heard anything for 7 years?
So, it was a promising, from what I recall, a promising film director or producer decided, I like this Doctor Who thing, I want to bring it back. And because Doctor Who was a dying art, the BBC were saying, we don't want to do this whatsoever. But because he fought for it, he got there and he made it. And he made lots, hopefully, and today, lots of people very happy. And because we had the movie, it provided a lot of fresh, new, raw material for the new series to take on.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's definitely worth mentioning. And also, just the fact of Paul McGann getting the role. Now, I don't know how true this is. I've actually read, and Wikipedia is not a very trusty source always.
Sure.
It seems to claim that Paul McGann was actually the runner-up to play the fifth James Bond.
Instead of Pierce Brosnan.
Now, I can actually fully see that.
Me
after
too.
Watching this movie.
Yeah.
But look, you know, you don't get James Bond, Doctor Who. That's not a bad second run,
it's
to be honest.
Pretty good one.
Yeah. So what a shame he only got that one kind of appearance. It really, I felt kind of saddened when the movie ended because it was like, he really could have done more, I think.
Although it is sad, and Paul McGann is probably one of my favourite Doctors of all time, it definitely makes his character more mystifying.
Yes, that's right. There's plenty of unanswered questions, if you will. One of the biggest unanswered questions to me is, why does he have so much energy?
I know, he's ecstatic.
He never stops running in this movie. Like, if we played a drinking game of how many times Paul McGann's running near Grace, like chasing up and down, I reckon we'd be blind drunk doing this
review. I'd be off my plonker.
Oh, it'd just be absolutely madness. But also, as we said, 1996, the movie, it's been 7 years past. There's a lot that I noticed that feels so different to what we're watching even in the 80s.
It is very different.
This looks way more cinematic. Now, I understand, yes, it is the movie, but even so, there's some beautiful shots. I'm even seeing them playing with some Dutch tilts here in Doctor Who. The lighting's just a lot better, and overall, even the graphics, like when you see that
very
snake,
so.
When you see that snake come up, and just all those bits and pieces, it really felt like it was Doctor Who for the new era.
It did. And I think that's why, like, a lot of people classify this as new series and some classify it as classic series, but I think it's neither. It's kind of more a bridge in the gap. It feels very much its own entity with all these amazing graphics and shots. It doesn't feel like nor one or the other.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point because, you know, you asked me this question before we went on the air and you said, well, do you consider this old or new, classic or new? And I said this is classic Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But the more I think about it, maybe it is that gap. I mean, it was such a gap in between. It really sits on its own, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very much its own plane of knowing.
And it's hard to believe that it's the only Doctor Who-produced show of all of the 1990s.
It is.
Which is somewhat bizarre, but pretty cool.
Very much so.
Paul McGann was the Doctor of the 90s.
He was.
If you like to say. So, did you have a problem with the fact that we don't see Paul McGann for the first 20 minutes? I mean, really, we only get an hour with him and that's it.
I don't have a huge problem. I'm actually quite glad that we see McCoy go and he passes on to McGann. I think that's very nicely adjusted to. It's not immediate and in your face. Like, you could have had the TV movie open with McCoy regenerating into McGann.
Yeah,
that would have been too full
for
a fresh new audience who have probably never seen Doctor Who before.
Yeah, it would have been way too jarring, I think.
But I reckon it's executed rather nicely that we have that first 20 minutes or so and then the concept of regeneration, which we've talked about on the show before.
We have, yes.
Yeah, has been introduced here for the very first time for some people.
You know, I got to say, it was done very strong here. There's a few regenerations I've seen over the years. I'm like, gee, that was a bit lame. But this one was good. As you said, it was like a slow-moving type one.
Yeah.
And the whole, you know, segment where, you know, McCoy's actually died.
Yeah.
And then they you know, he's now a John Doe and they throw him into the, what do you call
in,
it?
In the morgue,
Into the morgue and next minute, boom, the door starts coming down and then we get Paul McGann. And just that whole segment, especially with that guy who works there,
who's Pete,
who's overseeing all the bodies, that was comedy gold.
It was really nicely tied together, that first 20 minutes. It was very dark.
Yes.
There was lots of contrasty bits that you wouldn't normally see in Doctor Who, like with when they were trying to do the surgery on the Doctor.
Yes, yes.
And then we have that subtle comedy in there with Pete and with a few other guys there. There's definitely an all-compassing kind of feel with this movie, and you don't really know, even at this point, what it's going to be like when you go in.
No, that's right. And for the most part, it's actually a pretty dark first 20 minutes, and I think Pete was that perfect tool just to kind of lighten up the mood a bit here and there.
He was.
Yeah, especially when he was watching Frankenstein. I love that. He's watching Frankenstein, and next minute you got Paul McGann almost walking like a bit of a zombie. I just thought that was
it's
a cool
It's a lovely
little
contrast. Very clever directing there. Now, I got to mention on the note of Frankenstein, I mentioned to this before, that Mary Shelley, who originally wrote Frankenstein, would later travel with the Eighth Doctor as a companion for 3 or 4 Big Finish audios.
There you go.
Which is absolutely fantastic.
Plenty,
I recommend
plenty
it.
More. You know, I always think Big Finish are kind of like, they're like a toy company. They fix toys pretty much. So if
they
there's
fill
any,
all the gaps.
That's what they do. They just fill gaps. If there's something wrong, the toy's broken, people didn't understand it in 96, in come in Big Finish and they kind of fill in all those gaps.
They fill up all the continuity errors galore.
And just quickly on Big Finish, obviously we've got to get back to the movie. But Big Finish were kind of, they saved Paul McGann.
They were
the
saving light, pretty much so. And I think if it wasn't for Big Finish, I wouldn't have as much appreciation for Paul McGann as I do now.
Yeah. Because you have a number of those audios, don't you?
I do. I remember probably 5 years ago when I introduced you to the TV movie, I started from the very start and listened through to all of the Paul McGann audios. And it's quite a journey. And I think for that reason, he definitely became my doctor.
That's cool. Mm. Yeah. So he is your doctor.
Yeah, by a mile.
There you go. Yeah. Awesome stuff. What did you think about Paul McGann's appearance in this film, as far as, you know, it's a new doctor, he's the Eighth Doctor.
Yep.
What did you do you like his clothing, what he's wearing and all that?
It's very quirky. Probably not in the sense of Colin Baker's coat quirky.
Nothing will ever be as quirky as that, I'm afraid, yeah.
But the way he kind of goes about, like his costume is made up of a Bill Hickok costume for a New Year's Eve party, which he continues to wear, which is great. But yeah, I guess very much in comparison to the Doctors before him, he's very new. He's a lot more kind of whimsical and merry.
Very much so.
And yeah, there's definitely a very new sustenance of energy to him, especially in the groundbreaker of this film, the Doctor experiences romance for the first time on the screen. And we, of course, get the kiss. And this...
For the first time ever in Doctor Who history, the Doctor kisses a girl. Oh my God, you know?
Yeah. And this obviously at the time would have divided people because people would be going, no, no, Time Lords can't have sex or do this or...
I could just imagine some geek at home going, no! You know what I mean?
What I think is absolutely hilarious that Virgin Books, who published the new adventures with the Doctor and Ace after the TV series had finally finished, they continued in book form. And they introduced the character Bernice Summerfield, who had become the new Seventh Doctor companion. The last book that they ever did with the Doctor Who title on it had the Eighth Doctor and Bernice Summerfield. And I just think that it's absolutely hilarious and a slam in the face, like the TV movie on steroids, that they had a bedroom scene with Bernice and the Doctor.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it, that's for sure. Oh, good stuff. Now, we have... Two faces in this movie that only ever pop up in this movie. We never see them again.
No.
We've got Chang Li, which I've got to say, that's a very simplistic name, isn't it?
Sure,
he's an Asian guy. Let's call him Chang. I don't know. That kind of annoyed me.
I love Chang Li. I think
he was good in this film, yeah.
Absolutely fascinating. We see him for the first time. He's in this gang group that have been stalked by these mobsters, and obviously... The Doctor gets caught up in this and he's shot. But then we kind of see him mellow towards what he thinks is the right side with the Master, but of course it's not. But he becomes a very... From the get-go, we know that he's loyal. He delivers the Doctor to the hospital. He does the Master's bidding. We know that he's, in some capacity, he's got a servant heart. A very loyal character. If I was to kind of bring it full circle, Chang Li is very loyal.
Yeah, I think that's right. Chang Li, at the end of the day, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
But he's a young guy and he just got a bit misled.
He thinks he's doing things for the right reasons, but of course, they fall through.
That's right. Yeah. And that was the Master just being so great at manipulating him as well. And just going back to when you mentioned about Sylvester McCoy gets shot. Mm. You know, when I saw that, I started thinking back to Spearhead from Space.
Yes.
In that first part.
When right, John right Pertwee falls out the TARDIS.
Yeah, John Pertwee just falls out of the TARDIS face plate. It just reminded me of that. So I thought that was pretty excellent stuff. But, look, I thought Chang Li did a very good job. He actually gets quite a lot of screen time in this movie.
He does, probably more so than Grace did.
I agree with that. And what were your thoughts of Grace? Now, these two characters are actually like American background too, aren't they?
They are, yeah. And I think that's very right in an American setting that they get American actors who are... their origin... is from that place.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think Grace is definitely the kind of the right sort of character for that setting. Now, Grace, if you don't know, is a doctor. She works at a hospital, which you might think is a bit cliche to start off with, but she plays a very significant role in the regeneration process and how the audience perspective understands that. Very much so that Grace is kind of... the physical embodiment of what the audience is seeing. So everything that pretty much, aside from the intro with the Seventh Doctor, from then on, the perspective is more so from Grace's point of view.
This was one part where I felt that the film had a bit of a flaw, at least in my opinion. I really liked this whole idea of, you know, she thought he was a bit of a madman when she first met him, and who's this crazy man? You know, especially in that scene where he's, like, jumping in her car and, you know, he's, like, he's dying and all this and that. But I didn't like how quickly she got convinced that he was actually a good person. There's this scene kind of mid to late way in the film where she's actually trying to call up the ambulance for like the psychiatric ward to take him away.
Yeah.
And he walks through glass, which was pretty epic.
Yeah. And it's then, like jelly.
Yeah, that's right. It was like jelly. And then at that point, it's kind of like, yeah, okay, I'm going to trust him. I don't know. It felt a little bit too easy for me.
I felt like if this were in a season, it would probably be by episode 3 or 4 or 5 that Grace would decide to trust the doctor.
Yeah. I really wanted... I think this movie could have easily gone 2 hours.
Yeah.
I wanted longer of her not trusting him whatsoever.
Me too.
And then somehow raising the stakes high enough that she actually goes, you know what? It's probably in my best interest to trust him and let's move forward.
Absolutely. Now, we've got to talk about this regeneration scene. He comes out of the morgue and he's wrapped in this shroud. He's basically like the second coming of Jesus. Now, there's a very kind of biblical reference here. He's banged himself out of the morgue, which is left this empty space, very much like the empty tomb. And he's wrapped in this shroud and he's got this long, luscious hair. And he's kind of questioning his existence.
And he's got both arms extended wide.
Yeah. Do you reckon this will be a bit of a mixed connotation when the film came out? What do you reckon the audience perspective was on this?
I think there's definitely some religious undertones at play here. There has to be.
And with the crown of thorns at the end, that's another one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you've got good and you've got evil.
Reincarnation
with the master
as well.
Yeah. Oh, I think for sure. There's easily some like religious undertones here. In a way, it's kind of a little bit too in your face, wouldn't you say?
It is. Yeah. I think so. If you were like a non-religious person watching this, you'd kind of be a bit taken aback.
Yeah, it might be maybe slightly confronting in a bit of a way. But again, I kind of loved it because, you know, it's a brand new character.
I think it's the
same character, but it's a new actor. And I thought
Very much a new character, though.
Essentially.
Yeah, every doctor is a new character.
Acts different every time. So yeah, no, you're not wrong about that.
Now, I just love when he's kind of walking through, stumbling over, he's got water pouring on him. I just love that there's this whole hospital ward that's just abandoned and windows are smashed.
Oh, that made no sense at all. Like,
it's just like there's... I want to see that story. I want to see what happened in that morgue where people are like, get away! Something's happening!
Yeah, you know, I reckon that's another... That's like the sequel to this episode, really. It's like, where did they all go? Like, hospitals are open 24/7.
I know.
And what was weird, you know, he kind of just exits... You know, he makes his exit out of the morgue or whatever.
Yeah.
Starts walking around. What, like, there was no explosion. Why did everyone leave? And next minute, it's like an abandoned hospital. And I gotta say this. This film, multiple times, really reminded me of Terminator 2.
I've got to say that as well. And especially with the Master.
Yeah, and the Master especially, but also the fact that, you know, he's walking down, you know, those hallways in that gown, and it reminded me of, like, Sarah Connor when she's walking, and she's, like, a bit crazy, and that's a great film. I love that. You
it's
know,
a very good
That's probably the only... sequel, and I challenge this to our listeners, please email us in if you can come up with any more. I reckon that's probably one of the only films where it's got the sequel, or, you know, number two is better than the first movie.
I can't
name many others.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll leave that to our listeners. But going back here, we have a new actor playing the Master, and his name is Eric Roberts. What did you think of him, Tom?
Oh, a lot of people hate him. I love that he has two very different tones in this movie. Now, for the first half, he's walking around in this large leather overcoat with these shades like he's in Terminator 2.
Well, he pretty much got that, like a police officer type look, wasn't
he? Yeah.
And while we're on that topic as well, believe it or not, I am one person who actually likes the Resident Evil movies.
Yeah.
He looks so much like the bad guy in the Resident Evil
movies.
He
does, yeah.
Have you seen that dude?
He's
got slicked back hair. He's got the black glasses. He even kind of looks similar. Anyway, I'm getting off track again.
Yeah. And then the second half of the movie, he's this camp character in this Time Lord gown.
Oh, and can we talk about that entrance?
Oh.
When you see him wearing that gown, he walks down the stairs.
Yep.
I laughed so hard at that. It was so funny. The music was spot on here. I mean, throughout the whole film it was. But in this exact scene, it's like... and next minute, you know, he's walking down the stairs in this gown.
And I got to do the quote, I always dress for the occasion.
Nice. Absolutely. Oh, it's great stuff. Now, You love this, obviously.
Yeah.
What do you not like about it?
If there's anything I don't like about it, I feel like it was a bit short.
I agree.
It would have been nice if at the very end we saw Gallifrey.
Oh, that would have been cool.
Because he speaks about this planet like his family's there and all that. It's very mysterious. Another thing that I don't like is the representation of the Daleks at the start. We hear this weird alien voice, which is supposed to be the Daleks. Because what happened, this is a very funny story. When they were doing like all of the voiceovers in editing, and it says like on the script, Dalek, exterminate. This voice guy just came in and went, exterminate.
That was it?
Yeah, because they've never seen Doctor Who before. No, they just assumed that's how
it was. It's like an American production for this one.
Yeah.
Which is why it looks so different, I think, as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this was one of those rare things where I think an American taking over, even just for this one thing, really makes it feel unique.
Yeah.
That's what I loved most about this movie. I didn't love it because Paul McGann was in it. I didn't love it because of all these characters. The thing I loved most is that it felt different.
There are so many different themes circulating in this movie. Now, we start off in the TARDIS. It's a very kind of Jules Verne or H.G. Wells kind of vibe. Then we move into this gangland kind of vibe. Then it's in the hospital. It feels like a whole different kind of drama. And then it's all the end of the world stuff and the bike chase scene. There's so much crammed into this movie. I guess to the extent where it's not too much, but it's kind of on the bar of being too much.
Yeah, they did try to pack an awful lot in.
I think if there was something else that I'd have to not like, I think if they toned down and maybe brought it back to one or two themes rather than five different kind of themes going on.
Yeah, that's right. It got a little bit convoluted after a while. Yeah.
But not to say it was executed greatly, but if they just toned it down a little bit, I think it would have been a lot more well executed.
I'll tell you what I didn't like. I actually felt that Paul McGann didn't get enough dialogue in this movie.
Okay.
I reckon there's a few key scenes that really showcases what he can do. But yeah, I felt he just did not get to say enough in this film.
Yeah.
And that was kind of an annoyance I had throughout.
Sure.
But I'm trying to think. There was another thing I thought of as well. But yeah, I'll tell you what I do like. I love all these weird random cameos in this film.
I'm
not talking about famous people. I love Grace's boss, that gentleman in the suit, that looks at the x-ray, notices that the doctor's got two hearts and goes, well, no one will be seeing this. And he just tortures it.
Yeah.
I thought that was freaking hilarious.
That guy's great.
Never see him again.
No.
Just bins it. That was it. He's out. Took his paycheck. I love the dude fixing his car with the spanner.
He's seen for like 2 seconds just, and then he goes, oh crap, there's the police, got him.
Yeah, that's right. He's like a silhouette shadow. Yeah. And he just flies away. I absolutely loved him. I thought he was great.
And there's that police officer who they try and shoot.
That's right. Yeah. And again, guns being prominent in Doctor Who. This was weird, I thought.
Yeah, and it very much another thing they carried on into the new series and would probably had an effect on Torchwood as well.
That's a point.
Spawned from Doctor Who.
Mm. I love that random police officer who runs outside when they leave the car park to wonder what the hell's going on.
That's probably his running gag in every movie he does. He's like the guy who runs out to see where someone's going.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. Well, he's got it down pat because he did a fine job of it. There's a lot I like about this film, but at the end of the day, I can completely understand that some people had an issue with it.
Yeah. Now, story-wise, if you had the power, say Doctor Who finished, and you had the power to make a Doctor Who movie, is this what you would have made to summarise what Doctor Who was with 26 years of a back catalogue? Would this be what you would make?
I don't think this is what I'd make, to be honest. I don't think this sums up what Doctor Who is at all, to be honest. I think if you show someone this, and again, this was the first piece of Doctor Who I ever saw, this doesn't feel very, very sci-fi to me at all. Mm. A matter of fact, watching this movie, it felt more like I was watching an episode of Supernatural or Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Very much so.
In all seriousness.
Yeah. I definitely think that the best thing that this movie did, they didn't do some kind of massive war with Daleks and everything.
No.
They did something very new. And I think for a fresh new audience, an American audience as well, this is probably the best thing that they could have done.
Yeah, I think they did a good job here. And again, they didn't rely on just rehashing old content. They definitely tried something new. Mm. And Matthew Jacobs, he wrote this story, didn't he?
He did, yes.
Now, has he done much else?
I believe this is his only contribution to Doctor Who.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What I find interesting about the making of this movie as well, I'm not too sure how many partnerships there's been in the past or the present, but this film was collectively made by BBC, Fox and Universal Studios.
Which would have been the only time Fox would have had a part in this, for sure.
I think so.
Yeah. That makes sense. Very cool to see American production companies kind of taking advantage of this too. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah. And the other thing as well, they could have easily cast an American doctor, but I'm so glad that they picked someone who was British. They kept it true.
I think there just would have been too much backlash. Yeah. I honestly don't feel they could have done it.
Yeah.
Without getting killed. Possibly. You know what I mean? People would have been very angry about it. So.
Now, when this movie was kind of coming about, there was so many kind of like guesses who the next Doctor was going to be. Like, Eric Idle was one, and Alan Rickman, and I think at one point someone said Michael Jackson.
yeah, I mean, just anyone under the sun.
Because like, every time a new Doctor comes about and they don't know who it is yet, there is like betting galore of who the next one is going to be. Like, remember when Peter Capaldi was announced, how massive that was.
Yo, I can remember not many people were on the money with him. I remember when that was announced, I think I saw that name come up once or twice in my research, but I didn't think it was going to be.
And that's the best thing about the casting of the Doctor. They're not too massive that they've done a huge array of things.
Well, no, that's right. You're not going to get Daniel Radcliffe, you know, as the next Doctor. You're not going to get anyone who's huge, like a big name who's done a lot of massive parts.
You need someone who's kind of slowly coming out. And then once they leave Doctor Who, if they're on for a good enough amount of time, they go on to do bigger stuff because they've been associated with something
that's
so massive in itself.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, it can be somewhat of a launching pad at the same time.
It has been for like David Tennant and Matt Smith and Tom Baker.
Yeah, all had successful careers after it too. Yeah. It's funny, I look at this film and it is a piece in history. And I always think those people who only get that one shot at the big time, that always really fascinates me. And I've got two examples. George Lazenby from James Bond, he did one film only.
Yep.
That was on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which I thought was an awesome film.
Yeah.
But I, like, really, that film fascinates me. I'm more inclined to put that on than I am to watch one of Roger Moore's seven films.
It's very much akin to me and the Doctor Who movie.
That's exactly right. I got one more example, and probably not many people will appreciate this. I'm a big fan of the band Van Halen.
Yeah.
And they had three singers. But the third singer, his name was Gary Cherone, he only did one album with the band. And the band's had 12 albums.
He did, yeah.
I love that album. A lot of people reckon it's complete rubbish and it's crap. I'm a big fan of it. But again, it stands in history because it's like the only one that he did with them. It's really unique. It sounds completely different. It's really dark.
Yeah.
That's why I'm really fascinated by when people have kind of that one shot in a big, massive franchise, you know? And Doctor Who has done it with Paul McGann as well. Technically, you could say Christopher Eccleston as well, but he got 13 episodes, so he had a good run.
He got a whole year.
Well, that's right. Yeah, there's plenty of Eccleston, whereas here, we're done in an hour and 20, and that's McGann in a nutshell. Now, let's talk about your reaction when you went to hit play on some obscure thing on YouTube called Night of the Doctor, and you began to watch this mini episode commemorating 50 years of Doctor Who.
So I vividly remember I'd come home from school. I was in year 12. I'd come home from school after a massive day of study. I was probably at school till like 8 o'clock or thereabouts, and I went home, had my dinner, went straight to bed, and I got a text from a friend. He said, "Watch this YouTube video, you will die." And it was
it was a bit grim, yeah.
It was from William Yates, actually, if you're listening.
Hi, William Yates.
And I started watching his clip. I saw a summary of it, like a plot outline, a couple of days before, and it said, the Doctor goes to Khan, which is a planet in the brain of Morbius. And I was thinking,
awesome stuff.
And it says, but who could a Doctor be? I'm thinking, oh, it's either going to be John Hurt or David Tennant, because they're one of the ones coming back or coming into this episode.
Yeah, naturally.
And I started watching it, and you see this spaceship falling, and this pilot, she's left on her own, and then you hear this recognizable voice.
Can I do the opening quote?
Yep.
"I'm a doctor." That was it?
It was, yeah.
Nice.
And when I heard that, I could not believe my ears. I thought I was dreaming because I'd just gone to bed. I was like, what? And then the title credits rolled and you saw Paul McGann's name come up, and I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah. So timely as well. This is when I just finished my massive Paul McGann marathon with all of the Big Finish audios I referred to before.
Yeah, it's just timed so beautifully.
It was fantastic, and I could not be happier. Another thing that made me really happy about this, when his regeneration was looming and he got the chalice, he recited all of the names of his companions in the Big Finish audios, and I was like, oh, they're canon now.
They are canon, yeah, technically.
But not only Stephen Moffat made them canon, but in the same minute he made another completely new Doctor canonical when he made Paul McGann into John Hurt.
Yeah, I gotta say, I loved that episode. You know, it's for like 5 minutes long, but it ties everything together.
It's one of the best things that Stephen Moffat has done in his reign.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. I think it should have been a whole hour long.
So do I, yeah.
And another thing, McGann just looked freaking cool. Like, it was like, he looks great. It was like, wow, he could play the Doctor right now, you know?
Yeah, he still could. We haven't seen like a whole season of Paul McGann since, so one day, if Chris Chibnall is listening, please just make a whole season with Peter Capaldi and Paul McGann together. That would just be excellent.
Oh, that would be crazy, wouldn't it? Yeah. I still think, why can't Paul redo it, you know?
That'd be great if just for a season they just paused and they just brought back a past Doctor like Paul McGann, who deserves so much better.
Oh, I think he deserves more than what he got, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that was I remember you messaged me and you said, "Ben, I've just flipped," or it was something like
I fell off my chair or something
because I wasn't expecting it when I went to watch it. And
you had seen the TV movie
I'd seen it at that time, and when I watched it, I said to you, yeah, I can't believe they did this. Yeah. But it was awesome fan service.
It was.
And that was good. And again, you know, it does mean that the high ups in the Doctor Who hierarchy, like Moffat and all those guys, they still feel that the movie does deserve to be talked about and recognised. It's not something that the BBC want to brush under the rug. They're very much they're proud of their history. And they certainly recognise Paul McGann as a collaboration to the Doctor Who franchise, if you will. So
very much so.
Yeah, but I like the score in this movie, just going back to the film quickly.
John Debney, yeah.
He did a good job here. There's some really dark, eerie kind of moments going on.
And the harpsichord going and the organ, that stuff was great.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. It had like a very, it did sound very 90s, the soundtrack.
It did.
And also, we have to talk about this TARDIS. The inside of it looked epic.
It's monumental. It's like Hogwarts from Harry Potter.
Oh, it is. It looks huge, doesn't it? They built a massive set for this thing.
I love the console room and I love the Eye of Harmony. There's just, it really adds to what the BBC couldn't do back in the past 26 years. They try to make it seem that as though it was infinite on the inside. But here, this is the TARDIS that we have all dreamed of. It's as big as ever. Like, this is the biggest we've ever seen the TARDIS.
Yeah, I do think this is the best example of scale, actually, arguably, of all time.
Yeah.
I don't recall seeing a TARDIS that looked anywhere near as big as this.
Yeah, I reckon you're right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's pretty damn epic, to be honest. Now, I remember you saying that Eric Roberts had his own personal makeup artist that was just touching him up throughout the whole That's awesome.
I think it's great.
Oh, it's good stuff.
They definitely did a good job.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the makeup was consistent and everything. So that's good. Tom, is there any other random facts or anything on your mind? But we are talking about Doctor Who the movie.
We are.
And believe indeed. It or not, we might never get to do it again. So. So anything on your mind? I know you must be burning with other things to talk about.
One of the things I love is that Paul McGann, whilst only having one major TV appearance, he's the shortest running Doctor, but the longest running Doctor at the same time. We saw him ascend on our screens in 1996. Then he had his whole back catalogue of Big Finish audios, comics, books. And it wasn't until 2013 he regenerated.
He was there the whole time.
He was. While Chris Ferguson, David Tennant and Matt Smith were going about their business, Paul McGann was running around somewhere.
True. Oh, yeah. Well, like he does. He just runs everywhere in this movie. You can make a joke out of it. Like, he just never stops running. I just can't believe it.
Now, there's something definitely we have to talk about before we come to our final close. There's this mention of the Doctor being half-human on his mother's side, and it was later alluded to in Hellbent, the series 9 finale. Now, do you think the Doctor is half-human?
No.
No?
Nah.
Where's your evidence?
I don't know. Like, I mean, he's got two hearts, so immediately to me, he's like an alien.
Sure.
But that's my thoughts on it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean... Well, they're still carrying on that trend today, aren't they?
Like, I believe he is.
Yeah, you reckon he's half human?
If the TV movie is canon, then the Doctor is half human.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, he's still got emotions and everything. So, yeah. I mean, he does act very humanistic in a certain way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this was interesting. I got to say, I had a hell of a lot more fun watching this the second time around than I did the first time.
Every time it gets better. I've probably watched it like 20-something times.
Gosh, yeah.
But every time you just point out another new thing or you remember a bit that you really liked, like these curious, they fit perfectly.
Yeah, that's right.
There's just so many wonderful bits that just kind of summarise the greatness of Doctor Who for me.
And did you like this whole millennium scenario at play? You know, it's almost the year 2000 and we...
I did. It felt very fitting for the 90s Doctor.
Yeah, I thought it was quite cool too. I really liked, they actually went to some lengths to make this feel like it was the new year. There were a lot of extras in that scene where they're counting down.
There was a massive amount of extras.
Yes, yeah. And it's those little details, in my opinion, that really go a long way and really sell the scene.
I think so too.
And what about... this is also something that I have to mention. I had a real issue with the final stages of this film, and I'm referring to when he's actually kind of locked up in that torture device.
Yep.
And the Master's talking to him. That was just... That wasn't... I didn't like that much at all.
It didn't sell to you?
Not at all. And then he gets in a quick fight with him and it was over way too quickly.
And then he kills Chang Li and he throws...
Well, that I liked. I didn't see that coming.
He throws Grace off the... off that railing.
Yes, that's right, off the railing. Yeah, she takes a nasty bump.
Yeah, but of course they come back to life.
That's right. And you actually said something that I didn't realise. And that's that when, spoilers, the Master gets, you know, he falls into the Eye of Harmony, he actually turns into the Char-Grilled Master that we then see in an episode we've reviewed prior, the Deadly Assassin with Tom Baker.
So now, this is where, from today's point of view, it's only very recently that that's been succinctly put into chronology. It wasn't until the Big Finish Audio Mastermind... which is a companion chronicle, which only features the Master and Daphne Ashbrook and YJ Sisso as well as two different characters
from
UNIT.
Yeah. That's cool.
They're interviewing him throughout this story to find out where he's come from, why he's a prisoner in this black... I think, you know, the Black Archive from the Day of the Doctor?
I do.
So he's a prisoner in there and trying to find out all these answers. And we find out that the Master silhouette that we see, played by Gordon Tipple, at the very start of the movie, is actually supposed to be the Roger Delgado Master, who, of course, played the Master in the Pertwee era.
The best Master.
Possibly the best Master ever. Who then was executed by the Daleks, which I'm assuming will be at the end of Frontier in Space, which is an episode we're yet to review.
Yep, we'll get to that.
And then he becomes that snake-like creature and becomes Bruce, or Eric Roberts, as the Master. Then he falls into the Eye of Harmony, becomes the Charred Master, as we refer to, who then turns into Anthony Ainley, who we see from Tom Baker to Sylvester McCoy, who then turns into Alex McQueen, who then turns into Derek Jacobi, John Sim, and Michelle Gomez.
Tom Denham loves his Doctor Who, everybody. Well done. That's simply crazy.
Yeah.
How many Masters? But there you are. That's the timeline for anyone that was wondering.
Now, quickly, we just got to mention Alex McQueen as the Master. You haven't heard him yet, but you've seen a bit of him on television before.
Oh, absolutely.
Are you looking forward to hearing him?
I think of Alex McQueen as Neil's dad off The Inbetweeners. Neil smells like a brewery in here. Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to hearing him play the Master.
He's very good. And he's great with Paul McGann as well.
It's so bizarre because, this whole time I'm going to be listening to him and he's playing this villain. And I'm like, it's Neil's dad. Like, it's going to be very, very hard for me to try and adjust.
Awesome. And he's also played the Doctor as well.
Really?
Alongside Sylvester McCoy.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
It's a nice cast there of different people we got.
Yeah.
Okay, so final thoughts, Tom.
Final thoughts.
Where does this stand for you?
This stands as probably one of my favourite and most adored things in Doctor Who. So for that reason, with no qualms whatsoever, I give this a 10 out of 10.
A 10 out of 10?
10 out of 10.
My goodness. That's amazing. Now, I'm curious, when did you see this? Had you watched a lot of Doctor Who before this movie? Or was this like one of those early kind of...
I remember seeing... this would have been before the new series came out that I saw this. Probably just before the new series started, I saw this. I'd seen a bit of Classic Who, and I remember this was just on the ABC one night at like 9 o'clock when I should have been in bed asleep. But I was awake and I was like, I'm watching this. And it was probably one of the most awesome things ever because I was so confused at the time. But rewatching it maybe 5 or so years later, it's still as good as it was then.
And let's be fair, as far as the Doctor Who plot, this is actually more of one of the more simple ones that I've seen in a while to understand. I thought this was pretty easy stuff to understand. Just while I think about it, there's another awesome moment that I love in this film when the Doctor, he's traveling with the Master, but he doesn't realize he's the Master yet. And they're inside the ambulance. And then, I think the car gets knocked or something and the glasses come down and we see the green eyes of the Master. And then you get this look from Paul McGann, and at that point, he knows.
Yes.
I thought that was epic stuff.
Great execution.
I loved it. I thought that was really cool.
So what are you going to give it out of 10, Ben?
Okay, my thoughts. This is an interesting one for me. I love the fact that the cinematography and the overall production value has gone up significantly since we last saw Doctor Who in Survival in 1989. Mm. I really enjoy the performances here. I think Eric Roberts was pretty wooden, although I think Paul McGann was quite excellent, to be honest.
He was solid.
So much energy.
Yeah.
It's like he knew it was his only time.
Yeah.
So he just gave it everything he had. I think Grace accompanies the cast quite well. She does a good job, but she's nothing standout to me. My issue is with this movie...
She's no ace.
She's no ace, no. My issue with this movie is that it's not all too memorable. There's not really one sequence that stands out to me. It kind of all runs together. Chang Lee does an excellent job too. I think he really helps it. But overall, second viewing, I'm going to give Doctor Who the movie a 7.5 out of 10.
That's a pretty fair score.
Yeah, but I think if this wasn't Paul McGann and this was Colin Baker, that is his name, isn't it? Jeez, yeah. I went blank there. Well, I don't think I'd be as high on this film.
Sure.
Yeah.
It would be very kind of funny to see this American kind of thriller with this man in a rainbow vault.
Oh, I think it'd be brilliant stuff. Yeah. That's another thing too. This film it's not just dark in tone. It's actually a very dark film. There aren't that many. I'm talking about like the lighting and everything like that. There's not many moments where it's bright.
There's only one daytime scene, which is like...
I was going to say, when he's back at the house. And you got those people doing that fun run jog in the background. Another moment that I just laughed at. Yeah, I think I really like this film for how quirky and bizarre it is.
Me too.
But I can't deny there are some serious faults with this movie.
Yeah, I am aware that it does have its flaws inside and out. But for that, I still adore it for what it is.
But sometimes flaws make things what they are.
They do.
Like, it can't all... You know, not everything can be perfect.
No.
Like, look at Delta and the Bannerman. I love how flawed that episode is. But it makes it so much more fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with that, I've given it a 7.5. And Tom, a 10 out of 10. Your only 10 out of 10.
Is this the first 10 out
of 10? This is your first 10 out of the 10.
Have we done many 9 out of 10s?
No, we've done a lot of 8s.
I feel like we gave Caves of Andazani a 9
out of 10. Oh, we might have given that a 9. That was quite a solid episode.
Yeah.
So with that said, Tom, celebrating 20 years of Doctor Who, the movie, it lives on.
It does.
What would you say to fans of Doctor Who about this episode? Do you think is this worth a look? Obviously,
it's must-see viewing for the purpose of seeing the transition of classic into New Who. There's a lot of things that influence the Russell T Davies and Stephen Moffat era of Doctor Who, such as romance and just even some of the aesthetics of the show are from the TV movie. There are a lot of things that definitely come back to this. And for that, it's definitely worth seeing.
Oh, well said. That was our review of Doctor Who, the movie. Initially, when we were talking about this, we're like, yeah, we'll do it for the 100th episode.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Awesome. And then, look, it can just be a little bit tricky for us to get these podcasts done. I mean, we both have to catch up, which is always a pain to have to deal with. No, just kidding. But, yeah, and then, you know, we have to watch the episodes and everything, but I'm glad we got to do it.
Same here.
So very thankful for that. So, Tom, we reviewed the movie, but obviously there must still be, like, some epic stories that you want to talk about. I know you were itching to review this, though.
There are still many episodes that we need to watch. And so there's a lot of great ones, too. A lot of greats that are yet to be witnessed.
That's right.
By your eyes.
Oh, yeah. There'll be plenty more to come. Thank you guys so much for your patience with these episodes. We're sorry that they're taking a little while to come out. But with that said, sometimes it doesn't hurt to wait for good things, does it?
No.
Well, at least we think the podcast's good. But, you know, if it's not, let us know. You can find us at...
Facebook.
You can find us at Facebook at Who's to Review. Or on our website
at Who's to Review Doctor Who. And you can also email us at Who's to Review Doctor Who at gmail.com.
And we have actually been getting some fan mail recently.
Yeah, some requests for episodes, which has been great.
Oh, it's been awesome.
Yeah.
And I remember one guy, you know, we got an email. I can't remember which guy said it. But he goes, oh, can you please review Dragonfire? And we had just reviewed Dragonfire like 2 days before. But
yep.
But we hadn't uploaded it. So I was like, oh, well, actually, Tom is editing it and it will be up soon. So
we got a bit of hype from that.
Yeah, so that was pretty cool. So send through any comments. If you absolutely hate Doctor Who, the movie, I would love you to write to us and try to convince Tom that it's rubbish. It's a job.
It's going to be very hard to convince.
It's going
to
be
me.
so difficult.
Yeah. But even if there's an episode that you love that is unscathed in our podcast, definitely get in touch with us and remind us of the greatness and the glory of your favourite episode, because we want to hear about it. We want to watch your episode and we want to see what we think. And we'll definitely give a shout out to whoever recommends us something.
That's right. Who's to Review? It's a bit of a long-term project. Eventually, we are going to watch every single episode of Doctor Who. Although, Tom, you've almost seen everyone anyway, haven't you?
Yeah, I'm currently working my way through every single episode in order, which has been a great journey. I'm currently up to the Dalek invasion of Earth, which is still pretty early on, but I'm definitely going good for time.
Yeah.
I think I'm in the end or maybe halfway through series 2.
You're doing very, very well.
Yeah, but it's nice to kind of go out of sequence and watch these episodes for the purpose of the podcast.
Oh, absolutely. It's always fun, especially looking at different eras and different periods. With that said, we have one more final thing to discuss. Some big news broke, and that was during this massive gap since we've done this podcast. Peter Capaldi is going into the Christmas special, and he has a new companion by his side.
Not for the Christmas special, however.
I apologise. Well, why did we get that clip then? I thought that was the Christmas special.
So that was for Series 10.
Right.
Which will be next year.
Right.
Upcoming, we have the 8-episode series of Class.
Yes, okay.
Then we have the Christmas special, whom, spoiler alert, we may see the return of none other than John Barrowman.
Oh my God.
As Captain Jack Harkness.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's been very suggestive online of recent, so I wouldn't be surprised if John Barrowman were to make an appearance in the Christmas special.
You know, I remember I said to you, do you think John Barrowman or Captain Jack will come back to Doctor Who? And you went, nah.
Yeah. I was sold that he wouldn't come back. But now, since he's been doing Big Finish, Torchwood, he's definitely getting back into the groove.
Yeah, that's cool. I think it'll be cool to see him back. Hopefully he does make an appearance. He's probably going to look a lot older.
He still looks very much the same.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah. Oh, good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Well, that was our review of Doctor Who the movie. Thank you guys so much for listening. Check it out. Have a watch. It's fun viewing. You can get it done very quickly in about an hour and a half. This is available on DVD, and this is very easy to find. I see Doctor Who the movie at every store I go to.
There's one or two ways that you can do this. You can buy it on its own, or you can buy this in the Revisitations box set, which also includes The Talons of Wang Chiang and The Caves of Andazani,
which have all been reviewed on this podcast.
It is a solid box set.
Yeah, wow, that is an amazing box set.
Probably one of the best box sets in the Doctor Who DVD catalogue.
Yeah, just absolutely spoilt for choice. Thank you guys so much. We will be back with episode 17.
16, so. Wait, no.
Episode,
you're right.
Episode 17 next week. At least I can keep counting, Tom can't.
I'm just way too...
You're too amped up on all this Paul McGann. We will see you guys back very soon. Thank you all again. Have a great evening or wherever you live, morning, night, day, whatever. Just be safe and enjoy yourself. And just remember when you wake up in the morning, don't take it for granted. Just enjoy it.
Yeah.
See you later.